Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
I have a question, Giglio.
This is
seasoned veteran dad to seasoned veteran dad. Because you do carpool, right?
I do.
So, I have an eighth grader. This is now year three of morning carpool. And while the school frowns upon you dropping your kids off in the vicinity of the school, they actually want you to go through the drive-thru, the driveway for the carpool. I've learned a trick to avoid that. And usually the first 2 weeks of school are the worst for the carpool lanes. Are you tracking right now?
Okay.
So is this a seasoned dad veteran move to take my kid to a block where I know there's a crossing guard, drop him off there?
This is middle school. Yeah, that's fair game. Yep.
So he's eighth grade. And rather than going through the carpool lane, which is backed up like blocks on blocks on blocks, typically the first couple of weeks or any sort of return to whatever, like in 2 weeks, I know it's going to die down. And I'll just go through like it's no big deal because I think all the sixth grade parents are learning the process, right? And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of people in that carpool lane right now. But with the eighth grader, I was like, look, dude, I'm dropping you off at this particular block. I know the crossing guard's there. You're good. Okay? Nobody's getting mad?
Shouldn't. Not middle school. In elementary school, you have to be a little bit more rigid.
Yeah.
I mean, now, I would drop my kid off on like MLK and be like, just get out and walk. I definitely did that once or twice over at Washington Elementary School, particularly by like second grade. I used to walk to school. That's how old I am.
Well, I mean, our youngest son walks to school.
Yeah.
So that's neither here nor there. I once joked, because my older son goes downtown, I once joked with him during the height of the bird scooters. I'm like, well, if you don't want to go on a bus back home, we'll just activate a bird scooter. We'll see if that thing gets you back to North Hills. You know? We never actually got around to that. But I don't know about in your house, but typically, I get sad at the beginning of things, right? So like when my kids went to kindergarten each time, like I was sad. I wasn't sad on the last day of school. I wasn't sad or whatever. I always get sad at the beginning of things. So first time with kindergarten, I was legitimately like sad. First time with fifth grade with my oldest son, I got sad because that was his last year in elementary school. First time in middle school, I got sad, that kind of stuff. This is the first time I've actually started a school year not sad. Because I got one wrapping up elementary school and one wrapping up middle school. And at no point was like, oh, man, here's the beginning of like this era coming to a close. I was like, get out. Go to school. Wear your mask. See you later, guys. Dude, it's been a rough summer.
I gave him a lunchtime speech.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, listen. You just need to tell them, I'm not sitting in a group. I'm not eating in a group.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Go
yeah.
outside. If they let you go outside, I don't care how hot it is, go outside.
Yeah.
I'm like, keep your mask on. I don't care.
I don't care.
That was my go get them speech today.
Just don't take your mask off.
Don't eat with anyone.
No.
Tell the teacher that you need to go outside. Take a break.
In all seriousness, my speech to them was, look, guys, you know I love you, but it's time for you guys to go freaking back. Because especially my youngest one, he hasn't been in school since March of 2020, man. So, like, you're missing out on making friends. You're missing out on this. Wear your mask, but, like, love you, but you need to go. You also need to be away from your brother. You guys are, like, sick of each other. So, and then with my oldest one, it's like, yeah, you need to go, like, figure out this whole dynamics of, you know, other kids and social cues and...
Eighth grade.
It's time for you to grow up a little bit, if you catch my drift. So, anyway, that was the day today. I was not at all sad.
Well, do you know what happened today for me the first time?
No. Oh, I know. Yeah, I know what happened today.
and I already have an AARP card, but if I didn't, I definitely earned a punch. on it today. My oldest drove to school, drove himself to school.
Dude.
For the first time today.
Dude, when I saw your older son, James, when he had to come, he had to come
drop something off.
He had to drop something off. At first, I was annoyed. Because
he didn't know how to drive. Because
the way where our building is, our building's off of Highwoods Boulevard here in Raleigh. And in order to get to our building, you have to do this U-E in one of the median lanes. And he was there already, so I go in to, like, I'm the next man up, and it's like, all right, dude, I had no idea who it was. I was like, come on, man, let's go. Like, are you going to go? Like, there's nobody coming down this way. Let's go. Wouldn't move.
Super cautious.
So I was like, all right, well, screw it. I'm going to go ahead and go. And then as I'm looking at the car, like, are you okay? And I realized it was your son. I went, oh.
First time with one of those. We don't have those in Gardner.
Yeah. And that's when I saw him in the parking lot. I'm like, dude, you just got to go, man. You got to be aggressive.
Be aggressive.
Got to be aggressive on this sort of situation. So I think today for people who have a sixth grader, people who have a kindergartner, people who have a freshman in high school, or even people who have sent their kids off to be freshmen in college, you could say it's kind of like a preseason. This week, the stakes are very low the first week of school. You know, you get an idea of what your class is going to be like, meeting people, where you sit, and all that stuff. You kind of get a lay of the land. Nobody's expecting you to be named a starter yet, right?
This was a missed opportunity to say, speaking of being aggressive, the Panthers decided to kick 48 more field goals.
Jeez. Look, I get that there is a way to read too much into preseason, but the one thing that starts to bother me through the preseason is when you are clearly BSing us, okay? That's what I cannot stand. If starters don't play because you recognize, look, man, what else do they have to prove? Like Lamar Jackson, right? Lamar Jackson did not play for the Baltimore Ravens because what does Lamar Jackson need to do with the Baltimore Ravens right now?
Not a thing.
He is that junior in college. Like, man, I'm good. I know what I'm doing. Senior in high school. Like, man, I know what I'm doing. No big deal. I don't have to go through all this stuff. Sam Darnold's not that guy. Sam Darnold has no experience whatsoever with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady's offense and what they want to do. The last of what we've seen of Sam Darnold has been unimpressive. So, understandably, there's a lot of us out there who are watching the Panthers and wondering, okay, are we going to see something from Sam Darnold before the season starts? How has he been coming along with this offense? So we got one series where he threw two passes, completed one, and didn't do anything in the red zone. And I'm bringing this up because I can't tell you what to think about Sam Darnold. You can only believe what they're telling you. And so far, when it comes to Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers, I tend not to believe what they're telling me. You brought up Joey Sly, the kicker, where now all of a sudden we're wondering if they've got the right guy kicking field goals.
I'm not wondering. They don't. There's two ways to win at football, Joe.
Yeah.
You can accumulate more talent than anyone else and just outskill people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the easiest way to do it.
That's easy to do in college.
In college, you can do that.
Yes.
Even in the NFL, like, you can stumble upon a Mahomes,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's kind of like in the NBA, right? How many years of the Hornets have been waiting for one of these lottery tickets to come home? It's a difficult way to win, all right? The other way that most people try to go about winning, which Matt Rhule, I would say, is trying to do,
mm-hmm.
is you build up your defense, you build up your special teams, and you don't lose games. You make the other team beat you.
Yeah.
This is a Bill Parcells staple, right? You don't win the game, the other team loses it. You can't play that way, though, Joe, if your kicker can't make a 37-yard field goal, which Joey Sly now is missing.
He's missing those, but how much of that is Joey Sly? And how much of that is this coaching staff that keeps putting out there for like 63-yard field goals?
No, they've ruined them. But it's like you say about goaltending. It's voodoo.
It is.
Kicking is voodoo.
It is.
And if you're not in the right headspace, which he's not, it's not going to work. You can't say we're going to win with defense and special teams and have a lousy punter and a terrible freaking kicker.
Here's Matt Rhule, head coach of the Carolina Panthers, on what's going on with Joey Sly, who suddenly cannot make field goals.
It's like everything else. I mean, you have to produce, and so far Joey has not produced at the level we need him to. So I think he'd be the first guy to say that. So we have to find a way to get over that hump with him.
So there you go. There's Matt Rhule on Joey Sly. You think he's going to be the kicker week one? They're going to try to make a move? They're going to work through these problems?
They should have signed the Ravens backup kicker from ECU's, who they should have signed. Don't even let him leave Charlotte.
One other note from the Panthers, back to Sam Darnold, their quarterback, who we only saw in one series, he threw two passes. It's about getting reps. I mean, that's been the thing for me. If he's coming from a bad situation, if we can agree on a base, and that is Sam Darnold was the quarterback of a bad organization of the New York Jets, if we can agree on that base, then the next step is, okay, so if we're coming from that situation where it was just bad all around, wouldn't you want to get more reps for this new situation and not necessarily start out there cold for week one of the NFL season? And to me, this is an opportunity to get some more reps. He played one series, didn't really do much of anything. I would say, well, put him out there for one more series. Here's Sam Darnold on that topic, getting reps in the preseason.
Yeah, I think obviously you want to go out there and execute, maybe a little bit of both. I mean, you want to see playing time, especially before the season, you know, get started. But again, if we go out there and execute, you know, I guess at the end of the day, that's up to Coach Rhule.
That's Sam Darnold on getting more reps. The argument from Matt Rhule, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, for what's going on with Sam Darnold, why he didn't play in the first preseason game, why he was limited in this particular game, is because he doesn't have a full complement out there. You know, obviously they're not playing all the starters. They're still working through some offensive line injury issues. And I understand the thought on that. You don't want to put Sam Darnold out there in a bad situation, but I would also make the argument that he has to get used to these situations, because did Teddy Bridgewater have Christian McCaffrey for the entire season? No. Did Teddy Bridgewater have to work through offensive line issues as the season progresses? Yes. I mean, it's football, right? And you're going to deal with injuries. You're not going to have the full complement of everybody the way you would want to. Now, if you want to protect a guy in the preseason, then just say it. But I have this sneaking suspicion that they're trying to hide Sam Darnold because they're worried about if he doesn't go out there and look good, then the knives are out for somebody who a lot of people like me have told you isn't that good. And they decided to put their chips on another quarterback that they might have failed to assess properly in the way like they did with Teddy Bridgewater. So something to keep an eye on with one more preseason game to go and week one of the NFL season 2 weeks from this weekend. Honestly, that is what somebody should have said during the college football playoff expansion working groups. Somebody should have seen what SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey was doing, who's Emperor Palpatine in this situation. They should have seen what Notre Dame was doing. And Bob Bowlsby is like the bumbling C-3PO of the situation, going, oh, no, I don't know what's going on here. Oh, and then somebody should have yelled, it's a trap! Because that's exactly what happened with Texas and Oklahoma leaving for the SEC, the college football playoff expanding, so that could work out. And then, of course, ESPN, the television partner of the SEC, who also runs the college football playoff, could ideally have a monopoly on all things college football. Now, suddenly, Julio, Jim Phillips, the commissioner of the ACC, Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, and George Kliakoff, the commissioner, the new commissioner of the Pac-12, are suddenly...
Georgie K.
I'm going to go with Georgie K. Are suddenly, you know, deep in Yavin 4 trying to devise a plan to deal with this new empire that's been created. And unfortunately, Star Wars ends with a happy ending. Unless you're Chewbacca, who doesn't get a medal at the end of Star Wars, but that's another topic altogether. This one doesn't end with a happy ending because there is no torpedo to hit the Death Star that is the SEC right now. What can these three schools do? What is this rebel alliance that has been formed, apparently, or discussing the discussion of this rebel alliance being formed? I'm not quite sure what they can do to wrestle back where college football is now headed, thanks to the SEC.
Well, according to Sandy Barber, who is now the athletic director at Penn State, They could share library resources. So just in case you want to check out a book from the PSU library, that same library card now, Joe, might just help you at the Hunt Library here at NC State.
Okay.
She said this with a straight face.
I know.
Joe.
I know.
This is who we're dealing with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, library resources? Really? Do you think ESPN cares about your library resources?
The one thing that
Joe, the woman's caught up in the Dewey Decimal System. Okay?
Hey.
Joe?
It's a pretty brilliant system, if you ask me. Unfortunately,
I don't think TV ratings go by the Dewey Decimal System.
Well, if you look at some of the ACC network ratings, they actually are in the decimals, if you will. So here's the issue. The SEC is playing a different game than these three conferences are playing.
Because they care about TV money
and football.
TV money.
And football.
Well, that's synonymous.
One and the same.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the reporting that's taken place with this supposed alliance that's trying to be formed between the ACC, the Pac-12, and the Big Ten is that, well, you know, we play a lot more Olympic sports than they do. You know, we believe in the collegiate model along with some advancements with name, image, and likeness, everything else. And somewhere Greg Sankey's probably going, cool, I'll just keep making money. I'll keep running college football. I'm good on that. So this whole thing seems to be best intentions. And unless they start to collectively pull television deals or try to create a voting block that keeps the SEC from occupying most of the college football playoff slots.
Well, the voting block is going to happen. But not in terms of the actual committee, but in terms of policy moving forward.
Mm.
I also think there's probably an unwritten agreement about the Big Ten not expanding and adding teams, poaching teams from the ACC or the Pac-12.
It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias.
Whoa.
What?
You got to play Baghdad Bob, Paul Feinbaum giving us the... This had nothing to do with Greg Sankey being proactive.
So now that this is all kind of... Now that we have a better understanding of what the SEC was doing by adding Texas and Oklahoma and how that's tied to the college football playoff, the SEC media arm has now kicked into high gear and has started to shape their message. And this was Paul Feinbaum earlier today on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, which you can listen to on 99.9 The Fan, essentially saying that the SEC, they are just simply innocent in this situation.
Well, I don't want to sound like a lawyer here. You said the word empower themselves. It's worth remembering this. Oklahoma and Texas wanted to leave the Big 12. Why did they want to leave it? Because it's not a very powerful league. They were struggling with their television contracts. They did not like some of the things that one of the Big 12's television partners, in this case Fox, was doing with them, such as having the Oklahoma-Nebraska game, which this year is the 50th anniversary of one of the most famous games in college football history, begin at 11 a.m. in Norman in September, where the temperature will be about 140 degrees to satisfy television. So they decided that they wanted to go somewhere else. And every time I say this, people react negatively, but the SEC did not go courting them. They called the SEC. The SEC took them. And Keyshawn, if the SEC had said, no, we don't want to take you guys, it's really not fair to college football. Do you know what the next call would have been? It would have been to Chicago, to the Big Ten, and the Big Ten would have taken them. So I think it's just disingenuous for a lot of people out there to make the SEC out to be like a Wall Street a tycoon in the late 80s and 90s going around gobbling up companies, breaking them up, selling them, and putting everybody out of work for a profit. That's not exactly what this is about.
Paul?
They reached out to us. It wasn't us.
No.
It was them.
No, we were just minding our business.
No, that wasn't a year ago. No. It wasn't when we had the insider trading knowledge about the expansion of the college football playoff. No.
Never.
This is an ancillary benefit, Paul.
By the way, if you are in the audience and you happen to be an SEC fan and you're sitting there shaking your head at Giglio and I about Paul Feinbaum's response that we're perfectly innocent in this situation. I said the same thing about the ACC when they added teams from the Big East. I said the same thing about the ACC in the wake of Maryland and the further expansion of what was going on and then working out an agreement with Notre Dame and everything else. Of course they did those things. Of course ACC.
And I don't blame them.
And nobody blamed them for it.
Yeah.
And I would say the same thing about the SEC. If there's an opportunity to make your league better, if there's an opportunity for you to stake your claim on college football and you add Texas and Oklahoma, you absolutely shoot your shot with that. You know why I believe that? You know why I'm cool with that? because the ACC did the same thing. Except when the ACC wrote that note in class to Texas and Oklahoma, I like you, do you like me? Check yes or no. Both Texas and Oklahoma said no. Clearly they had their eyes on the SEC this entire time. So this whole trying to massage the message of what's going on with the SEC is comical at best. Just be honest, man. Most people can process the honesty that comes along with what's going on in college football. Let's actually answer some Hey Joe questions. Joe cracked the door.
All right, boys, first up in Hey Joe from Darren on Twitter. Hey Joe, does Sam Darnold not playing in the preseason mean anything?
If I'm proven wrong, I'm proven wrong, and that's fine. But I am developing the theory, Jillio, that the Panthers, Matt Rhule specifically, he's hiding Sam Darnold in the preseason. Not because he feels he's going to unleash Sam Darnold onto the unsuspecting NFL minds, right? Like, I saw something in Sam that nobody else did, and I'm gonna just rip up this league, y'all. That's not what I'm saying. I think that Sam Darnold has not come along to the rate at which they're comfortable with, and they don't want to put him out there because they know he's going to look. And we already know that there's a discourse around Sam Darnold, and he doesn't want to feed that, which that's fine, but you can only protect Sam Darnold for so long. I don't think I'm off base on this one.
I don't really know what they're doing with Sam Darnold, so I'm not even going to venture a guess as to what their thought process is.
Here's Matt Rhule, head coach, Carolina Panthers, on Sam Darnold getting some more snaps after he was in one series against the Baltimore Ravens on Saturday.
You know, good. I mean, I thought hung on the one, you know, it wasn't open right away, but he knew it was going to be open. He trusted Robbie. He found a way to get the ball to him. I made all the right checks. And then, you know, I think Joe called a play action pass down there. It wasn't open. He threw the ball away. So kind of some of the things that we're looking for him to do, you know, live to play another play. So, you know, it was just a chance for him to get out there and get his feet wet, get those guys out there. I liked our operation. We were quick. So, you know, get him out there a little bit more next week.
A little bit more next week. So what, two series next week instead of just one series? We were talking about this before the show, Jillio. Their red zone offense continues to be not great. But I'm not going to get too wrapped up into that because most of that game was being played by Will Grier. And I understand why they're playing a bunch of Will Grier. This is a dude who just has not played for the Carolina Panthers. He didn't play all last year. And I think they're trying to figure out whether or not he's worth keeping around as a third quarterback with P.J. Walker being the other guy.
There isn't a thing that the Panthers are doing this preseason that makes any sense
Fair
to me.
Enough.
Like,
I'm trying.
I don't know what else you need to see out of Will Grier. He's not an NFL quarterback. Okay? Honestly. I don't make $8 million a year, but I can make a lot of these decisions for him. I'd also, post-haste, sign Jake Verity, the backup kicker for the Ravens, because The Ravens have the best kicker in the NFL. So they're going to cut Verity. Get in line, or actually trade for him. If you're really this intent on kicking so much, go get somebody who can actually, you know, make a kick.
Yeah.
That might be a good start, too.
Next up.
Next up, and hey, Joe from Daniel on Twitter. Hey, Joe, any college advice for all the freshmen starting their first semester?
He went on to say, okay, really, what advice do you have for J.R. Smith to order at Bojangles? J.R. Smith is at NCA&T.
Yes.
And I believe he was having a press conference today. I believe he's having a press conference.
He tweeted about Bojangles, and it was awesome.
Well, that's what it was. This was yesterday at around 2:40 in the afternoon. Dear Bojangles, I don't know who came up with these Bowberry biscuits, but may whatever God you pray to bless your heart and soul, man, oh, man. That was from J.R. Smith. NCA&T student now. And I believe he's actually going to be able to play golf.
Yeah.
So that's neat. That's a great story with J.R. Smith. So what should he get at Bojangles? You always get the Cajun filet biscuit combo, man.
Have you tried the new?
Haven't had a chance to try it yet. Maybe this week we'll try it.
It's good.
Legit?
It's good.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Because, you know, the world needs another chicken sandwich. This one's legit?
It does. It's good.
All right. You know what? I'll try it this week.
Yeah.
I'll try it this
week.
They
have it right here, though.
But I will, as Bojangles likes to jokingly say, you're not hungover. You just haven't been, you're just pre-Bojangled. That's all that is. It's true. It's true. Man, that Cajun filet biscuit combo. If you are a college student listening to this program and you find yourself in that situation, just take the advice of everybody else. Just go get Bojangles the next day. You'll feel fine.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need Pedialyte.
No.
Next up.
Next up from Johnny on Twitter. Hey, Joe, why do people get so caught up in preseason games? By the way, I think Cam is playing at an MVP level during preseason.
Yeah, Super Bowl. Just saying. Super Bowl for the New England Patriots when he's actually available to the Patriots and not on some weird COVID thing, which we'll get to in a little bit. I mean, the reason why people get caught up in the preseason is because it helps drive the points that you want to make. I mean, I think that's what's going on with these quarterback conversations. Like, Chicago is probably the prime example of that. Matt Nagy, the head coach of the Chicago Bears, really does not want Justin Fields to start week one. And he's doing everything he possibly can to justify Andy Dalton starting that week. And I understand why. You want to slow walk Justin Fields if he's going to be the answer. And I guess they got some winnable games early on, so maybe you give Andy Dalton the try. But fans are over it. Fans have seen Andy Dalton plenty of times. I think the same thing's playing out in New England with Cam Newton. We know what Cam Newton's about. We probably won't see a return to 2015 Cam Newton consistently enough. So fans get wrapped up in the guy you just drafted with your first round pick.
Former Chicago Bears quarterback Jim Miller was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning, and he also does the Bears preseason TV games.
Yeah.
He made a great point about Justin Fields, which I had never even occurred to me. You know, we've talked a lot about how the pro game has now started to look more like the college game in terms of structure of offense. And, you know, it's not abnormal now to see a Russell Wilson, a Baker Mayfield, a Kyler Murray come in and have success early in their NFL career, despite maybe not playing in a pro set offense in college.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Miller made the point, though, at Ohio State, Justin Fields, not only did he not call the plays, he didn't even know the names of the plays because Ryan Day has that David Cutcliffe-like control where he calls the play from the they line up, and then everybody looks to the sideline, looks at the wrist,
yeah,
and Cutcliffe calls the play, or the coach calls the play. Ryan Day calls the play. Joe, he didn't even know how to call a play in the huddle. Now, that doesn't mean he's not a talented player. It doesn't mean he's not going to figure it out either. But Justin Fields is on a legitimate learning curve right now. So when the Bears, I believe the Bears when they say Andy Dalton is going to start for us, and I understand why. Miller also made the point, like, we don't get to see practice. Andy Dalton actually looks really good in practice. This could be an NC State type situation where the Bears, when they play at home,
yeah,
their fans are going to be so unruly at Dalton. It's going to be like,
well, they were already booing.
How do you make this work? But when he goes on the road, he's probably going to be great.
They were already booing him. That's the thing. They're already booing
him. Outright booing him, yeah. And they gave a standing ovation to Fields. And I get it.
And Fields out here saying, like, look, man, that's not fair to Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Which good on Fields. Yeah, he's been absolutely good about this.
Fields has been awesome about it. He's like, hey, you need to cheer for who's ever out there. But I think there's more of a learning curve to Justin Fields because of that very specific situation. And you've seen this, maybe not as to the extreme of Ohio State, but you've seen this where everyone, Miami last year when they played NC State, they get to the line of scrimmage, then everyone stops.
Everybody stops.
Gets up, looks over, and you're like, what in the world is going on? Just call a play and run it. Let's go.
Here's Matt Nagy, head coach of the Chicago Bears, on Andy Dalton still being the planned starter for week one, 2 weeks from today.
The stock of Andy for us is going to be something for us is seeing what he does during the season. You know, that's how we got to be able to see what can Andy do during the season with this team and with these guys. That has been our plan this whole entire time. I truly understand the want to for people to want to see more Justin and all that. I get that. But we also understand where we're at and how what the true plan is. And all we can do is ask Justin to keep playing, and he's doing it, and Andy to keep playing, and Nick to keep playing.
That was Matt Nagy, head coach of the Chicago Bears, on Andy Dalton versus Justin Fields. Meanwhile, you got Kyle Shanahan, head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. People have seen some stuff from Trey Lance. They wonder if he's going to start. Is it going to be Jimmy Garoppolo? Shanahan's not saying.
Are you going to make an announcement? Is Jimmy Garoppolo your starter week one?
No, I'm not making that announcement. Let's try, though. Whenever I feel like it.
Tonight's not the night.
Not the night.
I mean, look, good on Kyle Shanahan for just straight up saying, I'm not going to tell you. I believe that, as opposed to, say, Urban Meyer, Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, ahead of tonight's Monday night game with Jacksonville versus New Orleans. Urban Meyer was asked if Trevor Lawrence was going to start tonight, and this is the response, which is hilarious.
I haven't even talked to those guys yet. He's in the hunt. If he wins it, you know, which that hasn't happened yet. So as soon as that happens, then you give him the one reps, all one reps. We have not even had that chat yet. We're just trying to get through practices right now. But tomorrow is a big conversation about that.
Hilarious. He's in the hunt.
Let's hope he can win it.
The first overall pick in the draft, the one that everybody wanted to tank for. In the hunt.
Classic college coach playbook. And it's I don't necessarily blame him, but it doesn't fly in the NFL. Obviously, Kyle Shanahan doesn't care. But when you're in college, people need things to write about. In the NFL, they actually have like daily availability, and you can actually talk to the players on a regular basis. In college, you don't get to talk to really anybody that the team doesn't want you to talk to. So what's the easiest thing to do? One of the things I've always explained to NC State. Talk about the quarterbacks and talk about injuries.
Yeah.
Those are the two easiest things to feed the media. Easiest. You know why? Because when you're a beat writer and you're covering a team, you have to write injury stories. Mm-hmm. Even if it's the backup freaking tight end, you have to write the stupid injury story.
Yeah, I got hurt, right.
And if there's a question about who's starting at quarterback, guess what? You have to write that story. So Urban Meyer knows this. He's completely manufacturing this. Are the beat writers in Jacksonville buying this? I doubt it. I've heard some of the questions, like, really? But that's just, it gives you an idea of Urban Meyer's mindset. Like, he still thinks this is Florida. This is Ohio State.
It's interesting you mentioned the reporters, too. There's a difference from a seasoned NFL reporter who deals with a different kind of coaching staff, players, et cetera. Like you said, you can go talk to players. You can go talk to the adults in that situation. As opposed to mostly college media, of course, college media where he came from too. But Ohio State, man, it's gonna be riding for Ohio State. In Florida, it's gonna be riding for Florida, and that I think is something that Urban Meyer is not going to be used to in the NFL, where he's going to get criticized even by the hometown paper if things don't work out. Next up.
So set them up, Joe.
Next up from Charles on Twitter. Hey, Joe, who's on the Mount Rushmore of Raleigh pizza, and why do those four not compare at all to pizza from the tri-state region?
Oh, geez. Why do we got to make everything about New York, man? Come on now. Although, shout out to Oakwood Pizza Box in downtown Raleigh. They make very good New York-style pizza, correct?
Mm-hmm. We had some.
I would say so.
Last week.
I think Christo's is another one. It's not too far in the North Raleigh area that actually makes another good New York style pizza. Although shout out to Lily's as well. They have a particular sweeter crust, which I like as well. But now you have to make, darn it. Now I'm going to wonder about the Mount Rushmore of Raleigh pizzas. All right, next up.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. Like that. I have to take some serious thought about that.
If you're from New York, New Jersey or Connecticut, you would not call it the tri-state region.
Area.
You'd call it the tri-state area.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit lost on the authenticity
of
the questioner.
Fair enough.
You know, the research triangle adjacent settlement.
It's the research triangle playpen. Next up.
Yeah. Next up from Nada on Twitter. Hey, Joe, Cam Newton and Cole Beasley having something in common besides football is the craziest game of Mad Libs ever, right?
Yeah. So we all know about Cole Beasley with the Buffalo Bills, who's been very upfront about the fact that he's not getting vaccinated. You know who else isn't getting vaccinated? And they've actually had COVID already. That would be New England quarterback Cam Newton. And Newton was absent from New England's practice today, and he's not going to be with the team until later in the week. The Patriots came out and explained the absence like this. Quote, on Saturday, Cam Newton traveled to a club-approved medical appointment that required him to leave the New England area. He received daily COVID tests, which were all negative. Due to a misunderstanding about tests conducted away from NFL facilities, and as required by the NFL NFLPA protocols, Cam will be subject to a 5-day entry cadence process Before returning to the facility, Cam will continue participating virtually in team activities and return to the club facility on Thursday, August 26th, end quote. Got to remember, only unvaccinated players are subject to the five-day re-entry process. So that would indicate that Cam is unvaccinated. At some point, now that the FDA has given full approval to the Pfizer vaccine, folks are running out of excuses to not get vaccinated. And it's as simple as that. And Cam absolutely deserves to be roasted if he puts the Patriots in a situation that costs him games or costs him his job. Because if you're going to be unreliable and you're not going to be available once the season starts up because of COVID protocols, well, then all you're doing is giving Mac Jones an opportunity to take that job from you sooner rather than later. I really don't know how else to put it.
The anti-vaxxers are a strange set of bedfellows.
Yes, they are.
And Cam Newton and Cole Beasley are representative of that.
Mm-hmm. But again, the excuses to not get vaccinated are running out. Although I'll be curious to see what where the goalposts get moved on Pfizer's vaccine getting fully approved by the FDA. Because remember, a good argument was, well, it's not FDA approved. It's for emergency use only. It's not FDA approved. Okay, well, today they announced fully approved for 16 plus, age of 16 plus. Now what? I've already seen some, well, they rushed it. It's optics, political. Okay, but you want to go take a horse pill. Got it. And the FDA actually had to come out this weekend and say, folks, don't take medicine for horses.
Oh, you can't now?
We live in the dumbest timeline, man. Next up.
Next up, I don't like this question, but we'll ask it from Kix on Twitter. Hey, Joe, when should we expect to see Rand on TikTok doing the milk crate challenge?
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Jillio, have you seen the milk crate challenge?
I have.
Yeah.
And I immediately iced my back.
Yes.
The second I watched.
Yes.
The one poor guy who went just legs up back first on the corner of one of those crates, which if you've ever encountered one of those crates with like a shin,
uh-huh,
or carried it and bumped, dude, into the wall, those do not give.
I've gotten to the point in my life at 42 where there's always like a new viral trend I cannot keep up with, right? Like, we've come a long way from planking or T-bowing, you know, like that kind of stuff, right? Or last year when everybody was doing the cranberry juice thing on the, you know, listening to Fleetwood Mac's Dreams, you know, just being vibing on a skateboard. I feel like that was a quaint time where you could focus on like one viral moment every couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Now there's a new one every day. There's no way to keep up with it. This one, on the other hand, I mean,
you could spend a lot of time on TikTok if you really wanted to keep up with them.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on TikTok. That's the thing.
Speaking of being tracked.
This one.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you want to. That algorithm knows you, man. That algorithm knows you. So this one involves people stacking pyramids of milk crates as high as they can, as they want. And then you have to climb the pyramid of milk crates and then get back down. Every single one of them that I've watched, none of them actually make it back down. And the way they fall is spectacular. Spectacular. Now, typically management will tell us, hey, you should jump on this viral wave. Here's the problem, though. If we got Jillio to do the milk crate challenge,
I'd be gone.
You would die.
Yeah.
I'm not making this up. Jillio would die. And I'm not really interested in breaking in a new co-host after we just got Jillio house trained. Mm. So I'm really not interested in that. Rand, on the other hand, would do it for the gram.
I would.
You totally would.
I would.
So here's my other question, and we'll wrap on this. Where are y'all getting these milk crates?
Right?
Like, you go? They still use milk crates at the supermarket?
I believe they are behind the supermarket. If you like drive behind the supermarket,
typically
I see
pallets, you know, like that kind of stuff. I see wood crates. Very rarely do I see milk crates. And see, I'm old enough to remember when milk crates were used as furniture. Okay.
Right.
Like, if you put speakers on top of milk crates, okay? You put your television on top of a milk crate.
Yes, sturdy, yes. TV stand.
Of course. That's what you use milk crates for, and you cherish those things. So I'm wondering where all these people are finding these milk crates to stack them as high as they've been going. And yeah, man, I cannot stop watching all these people just eat it on a milk crate.
It's big bad.
Yeah, you need 25 milk crates.
Where are you getting them?
I don't know.
Joining us in the studio for a hot minute here on 99.9 The Fan is Brandon Bishop, formerly of NC State. I would say the one who dropped some real truth bombs in Never Failed, the Russell Wilson podcast. Brandon, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. How we doing?
For those who might have missed Never Failed, it is available wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Russell Wilson story, the way it's never been told, thanks to people like Brandon who provided a lot of insight. And that's why I actually wanted to talk to you today, because I think it's one thing for Giglio and I to have our opinions on training camp and whether or not a joint practice is worthwhile versus live game reps in a preseason game. And you've gone through this a couple of times when you were trying to stick in the NFL. And I think you have a much different perspective than a lot of other people that we typically hear from. So for those who might not remember, you were last with the Eagles, right?
Briefly, like an espresso size stint. It wasn't long.
It wasn't a long one. Now, did you make it to camp with the Eagles?
Yeah, so I was 2015. I about midway through got on in Philly, but then had two more full training camp experiences in Minnesota the 2 years before that.
Would you say or agree with that there's a lot more stories like yours than not? We're focused on the obvious, you know, first round draft picks or acquisitions and how they're going to do in camp or how they look, and you get those reports. Would you say there's more players like what you've experienced than not?
Absolutely. Every year there's like thousands more guys that will go to camp for the first time or maybe the second time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then their careers are over and you never really hear from them again. But while people think preseason games stink, I'm usually pretty entertained by them because you've got guys playing harder than they've ever played in their entire lives.
Brandon Bishop joining us here on the OG, on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. I was just about to ask you about preseason games because we get this sense of, oh, you know, Sam Darnold now with the Panthers. Oh, he doesn't need to play in the preseason. Oh, okay, maybe. But
yeah.
What was your experience in terms of, because I think we have this concept of what is the effort level in a preseason game when in reality it's probably different than what we think of from the outside.
Totally. I think the effort level is maybe higher than a regular season week. I'm not going to say like a playoff game, but the effort's there. It's the execution. A bunch of guys that have been around for 3 weeks trying to execute plays that, you know, they may or may not have a full grasp on. But the effort is always there. The intensity is usually through the roof because these guys are literally fighting for a spot and a ticket. Yeah, so the games, while sloppy, are always like fiercely competitive because it's do or die for a lot of these dudes.
So we've heard the argument, not just from coaches, but I guess those who are going to parrot what the coaches say, that these joint practices, like we'll use the Carolina Panthers for the example here. They had two joint practices against the Indianapolis Colts. None of the starters played in that first preseason game. They had two joint practices with the Baltimore Ravens leading up to Saturday's preseason game. And Sam Darnold, the quarterback, we're all sitting here wondering what he looks like in the Panthers offense, has one series where he throws two passes. Again, the argument is, well, you know, we've gotten more out of these joint practices than we've seen in a preseason game. So what is going on in this joint practice that has coaches so gaga for it?
Yeah, you know, I went to three training camps, and I don't actually think I ever went through a week of joint practices. But from my standpoint, like, you're tired of everyone by the third week in August. You're tired of your teammates. You're tired of your coaches. You're tired of your best friend with the locker next to you. So, like, I can't imagine how these dudes feel, like, you know, going up against dudes that are wearing different jerseys than them. And that's why you see all these clips online of the fights and the punches thrown. I guess you could say you're getting a more competitive look. There's only so many periods of practice each week that coaches will let you go what you call good on good, which is just first team offense versus first team defense. And so you get, I guess, more of that in a kind of inter squad scrimmage against a different team. But I mean, in my opinion, you're just asking for conflict and fights. And it's no surprise that these dudes are ripping each other's helmets off because they've been practicing for 4 weeks and it's 90 degrees out.
Right, right.
And like, let's just get through this and get to the regular season because, yeah, guys are tired.
Brandon Bishop joining us here on the OG. And that actually brings up a point I'm curious about. How much of the preseason is install, or is that all mini camps? That's what those are actually for. Because if you're a guy trying to make a team, like you get to Philly, you not only are you trying to impress people, but you got to learn what the heck they're doing on defense too.
Exactly. So you get kind of two parts. In the spring and the summer, when they go through these OTA periods, you get what's the base install. So what does the offense do kind of at the 1,000-foot level? What are kind of our fundamental looks, packages, personnel, kind of the baseline set of everything? And that goes in. And that always goes in the spring. And then you do a reinstall, which is like 2 days at the very beginning of camp. But everything that's 102 and 201 and like the nuanced levels of the offense and defense that aren't just the baseline stuff, those are continually getting installed week two, week three of training camp. So, yeah, not only are these guys flying around 1,000 miles a minute trying to make a team, but they're also working on flashcards and note cards at night after practice trying to remember what the heck coach said in that meeting that I was halfway awake for this morning at 6:30 a.m. So training camp in August, it's a lot.
Brandon Bishop joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias, formerly of NC State. All right, so you've been out of the league since 2015.
Twice as long as I was in, yep.
Okay. Do you commend Tebow, Tim Tebow, for being out of football for as long as he did? Now, look, he got an opportunity you would never get. I think we can all recognize that. Like, I mean, unless you know somebody you can cash a favor in right now and get back out there. I mean, do you know somebody like that that can do that for you?
I mean,
like, is Mikey G going to help you out? Like, look, if here's Coach, my guy.
If Coach Reed at Clemson takes a defensive back job, you better believe I'm seeing if he wants to sign a software sales guy who's 185 pounds and runs a 4.9. Just, you know, just for one last shot at camp, of course, I'm calling in that favor.
So you call in the favor, all right? You're back out there. You're in uniform. You're in a preseason game. Do you – like, I could sit here and go, like, well, yeah, what do you expect? But from your perspective, were you impressed, or how did you interpret that for somebody who was out of the league as long as Tebow was, playing a position he'd never played before?
Yeah, I mean, he's a competitive maniac. I think we talked about it. Like, I throw him in the group of, like, the Kobe Bryants, the Tom Brady's, like dudes that are just cut a little bit differently than the average human and even the average, like, you know, NFL or professional athlete. So I wasn't surprised at all. I was more surprised he the first round of cuts, he got chopped. I was at least expecting him to make it to the end, but
yeah,
you know, when you're playing special teams for the first time,
yeah,
or you're blocking a 280 pound defensive end for the first time in your life, it may sound easy on paper, and maybe you are 6'3", 250, strong as an ox, but like that dude lining up across from you has done that his whole life, and he's 10 years younger than you. That's an uphill battle to win.
How sore would you be the next day?
Yeah, I mean, there's not enough ice baths in the world for like that kind of punishment.
Brandon Bishop, formerly NC State. Hey, man, we appreciate the time as always.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Julian Council. He hosts the Locked On Panthers podcast. He joins us now on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. Julian, what's up, man?
Joe, how you guys doing?
We're good, although I'd feel much better if, you know, the Panthers had a kicker.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice.
Wouldn't that be nice?
They have a kicker, but they let him go to New York. And then there was also another guy that could have been their kicker, but they cut him in favor of the guy who's now in New York, and now he's in Kansas City winning Super Bowls and the like.
Kicking's so, kind of at yeah. first. At first, I was upset at Matt Rhule, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, because he keeps putting Joey Sly, their current kicker, into bad situations. I didn't like that last year. Like, you can't ask your guy to consistently hit 63-yard field goals, right? And we saw it already once in the preseason. I just feel like, are we doing this again? How much of this is Joey Sly? How much of this is the way he's been handled?
Well, I mean, you guys pay attention to ACC football. Joey Sly wasn't even that good of a kicker at Virginia Tech, so
fair.
Why would we expect him to be any better in the National Football League? Like, I honestly feel bad for the guy. He spent this offseason seeing a sports psychologist, and as you guys know, and as many people know, just the position of kicker is extremely lonely when you are performing at the level or lack thereof that he is currently. So I do honestly feel bad for him. It's not Joey Sly's fault that the Panthers thought he'd be a better option than Graham Gano. That's asinine. Graham Gano has been a good kicker throughout his career. He had one bad year, and then the Panthers drafted Harrison Butker in the seventh round, brought in competition. Graham Gano beat him out, went out to be a Pro Bowler that next season, and the only thing that's really slowed him the last couple seasons was that knee injury that the Panthers thought possibly could be career-ending. But as we saw last year in New York, it's not career-ending at all, and he's very good and a lot better than Joey Sly. So I don't know why Matt Rhule has that extreme confidence, at least he had, in Joey Sly to keep trotting him out for NFL record-long kicks last year and then already early in the preseason against Indianapolis. Yeah, Sly's got to be better. But what do we honestly expect at this point in time for a guy who really has never been all that consistent of a kicker ever?
Julian Council, Locked On Panthers, is the podcast joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Obvious. I'm Joe Giulio. All right, Julian, speaking of trotting people out there, what else does Matt Rhule need to see out of Will Grier to determine that he really doesn't belong here?
Well, that's the interesting thing is on Saturday, I honestly thought Will Grier looked better than what P.J. Walker looked like last Sunday against the Colts, no? I still believe that P.J. is probably going to be the quarterback QB2 here in Carolina just based off of last year. He was the second-string quarterback in a relationship he has dating back to Temple when he played for Rhule. Grier, at the very least, though, if he performs the way he performed on Saturday night against Pittsburgh on Friday, maybe they can get something for him. I mean, they got something for Greg Little, who was not going to make the team and had done really nothing his first 3 years in the NFL, or 2 years here in Carolina, and Scott Fitter got a seventh-rounder from Miami, who was desperate. I'm sure there's some team out there that's going to look at Will Grier as the guy who was drafted in the third round, that he could potentially be someone that they could develop. So I don't know if they need to see anything else. I still think P.J. Walker is the guy here in Carolina as far as the number two quarterback, but at least Will Grier acquitted himself quite well for maybe the Panthers actually getting something in return opposed to just cutting him and then seeing, you know, how waivers go after he gets released.
Julian Council joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giulio. I'm Joe Ovias. He hosts the Locked On Panthers podcast, which comes out every day. I'm afraid that the Panthers are hiding Sam Darnold right now. Am I off base with that?
In a way, they are. Because like last week, I understand with the Colts situation, it's early in the preseason. You've had back-to-back joint practice with Indianapolis in a controlled environment where the first string guys got, 50 to 60 reps, according to Matt Rhule, and which was going to be way more than they were going to play in the actual preseason game on that Sunday. So I can see where in that situation, you probably got way more out of that than you were going to get with them playing a series or two, whatever amount of time they would have spent playing the Colts. Also, you have to look at that week. Matt Paradis, their starting center, he had back tightness and was out for a couple of those practices. Cam Irving was dealing with an injury as well. So, you know, the Panthers offensive line's been pretty bad the last couple seasons, and Sam Darnold was a dude who saw a ghost back in New York. Are you really trying to mess with his fragile confidence already early in the preseason? And then on Saturday, I was honestly surprised that he played, because it's the same situation with Baltimore last week. Joint practices, you're going to get way more out of that than you're going to get out of them playing what was a total of 7 snaps in that series, where, again, they didn't score in the red zone. Big surprise there.
Yeah.
But Dennis Daly had a start in place of John Miller at right guard. Everyone else on the offensive line was there, but Christian McCaffrey didn't play. DJ Moore didn't play. Robbie Anderson wasn't expected to play after having issues with his hamstringer in that week. So why put Sam Darnold back there behind second-string guys and not his top three receiving options?
All right, I'm going to stop you right there, then. No, I'm going to stop you right there, then. And Julian Council joining us here, Locked On Panthers podcast here on the OG. Why is Matt Rhule acting as though all these things are going to stay static throughout the season? Well, are you telling me the Panthers, you just said it yourself, the Panthers have had offensive line issues. They're still going to have offensive line issues. Now, if you wanted to make the argument that you don't want to put Sam Darnold out there and get him hurt in a meaningless game, I will buy that argument. But if it's this attitude of, well, you know, we want to make sure he has the full complement before he goes out there, that just tells me that you're hiding him, that you are worried that he's going to not look good in those conditions, and people are going to look at Justin Fields and the hype that's going on in Chicago. Or, as Giulio has pointed out, you could have had Mac Jones too, and your assessment of a quarterback might backfire again. That's what I think is going on.
Well, you already can question his assessment of a quarterback based off of what happened last year with Bridgewater and the money that they gave him.
Yes.
And then the fact that they're going and bringing in Sam Darnold, who has objectively, over his 3 years as a starter, been the worst quarterback in the National Football League when you look at quarterback rating. So there's really no reason to believe that Sam Darnold's all of a sudden going to get better, because there's not a large sample size of guys who have. And if anything, maybe what Sam Bradford might be the guy, but Sam Bradford mainly stole money throughout his NFL career than really elevating any team. Yeah, so in a way, they are hiding him. They want the situation to be perfect. And I understand, like, if you have some guys who aren't going to play who are injured, then why even put your quarterback out there? Then again, you're wondering, okay, does he really have that lack of a confidence, really that concerned about his confidence level to where how can you believe in him starting into the season where, hey, they lose week one to the Jets, which I can't see is possible with the amount of defensive injuries the Jets have had over the last week, but they lose week one to New York and to his replacement, Zach Wilson. Then where does he bounce back from there? So in a way, they're hiding him, but also I think there's enough justification in terms of the guys that have had injuries, particularly on the offensive line, to where they didn't want to play him. But I do agree with you. It's like the situation is not always going to arise where all five of your starter offensive line guys, offensive linemen are out there, and or DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Robbie Anderson, Terrace Marshall, and whoever are lined up wide every week.
Julian Council joining us here on the OG. Locked On Panthers is his podcast. You can download that. Give him five stars too while you're at
positive vibes only.
Because Ovios likes positive vibes only. Julian, where do you fall on the preseason? Are you heartbroken that there's only three games now as opposed to four? Do you love it? Do you want more of it? Or are you okay now with the three-game schedule?
It's fine. I mean, considering I do this podcast Monday through Friday, it's something to talk about at least. I mean, I don't need four preseason games, especially the fourth one when no one's actually going to play. So what's the point in sitting there and wasting 3 hours of your day watching it? So I'm totally fine with three games. I'd be fine with no games. It doesn't matter to me either way. Like, it's football to watch and give me something to talk about. So yeah, three games, four games. I don't care. It's preseason.
Julian Council, Locked On Panthers. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.